All right. Good morning, church. It is such a delight of my heart to look out and see everyone here this morning. I'm so appreciative of the food services team, the technology team, those who help with the setup and the breakdown of these events. You are awesome. And I'm really grateful for you who have chosen to come and be a part of this, another Worldview Weekend at Stones Hill Community Church. You're going to hear some exciting things today, some things perhaps you never heard addressed, maybe in your lifetime, definitely not in a church, but we are all about seeing life from a biblical worldview perspective, and I have been contending for months now that the biblical worldview is the greatest explanation for all of reality. It doesn't ignore entire swaths of data. It deals with everything. If you want to know how seashells got on the top of Mount Everest, the biblical worldview will give you that information with a global flood, okay? You want to know how the Grand Canyon came to be the way it looks? The global flood will explain that, okay? One of the greatest exhibits of the global flood is the Grand Canyon. So we have lots of different explanations for a lot of different things in the world, but the biblical worldview is going to give you the best one. Among those who have come to speak on our Biblical Worldview Weekends, we've had some incredible speakers. And this morning, it's my joy to introduce to you Helmut Welke and his wife, Thea. You're going to love them. I was privileged to sit at a table with them at Night of Hope last evening, which was an incredible evening. And it's just kind of interesting meeting them for the first time and then hearing him sing. And me trying to sing along with the pianist. So it was kind of an interesting way to get to know each other that way. Neither one of us can carry a note, but that's okay. But God is good, and we enjoyed that. And today we're going to have the privilege of hearing Helmut speak on three different occasions, and this is the beginning of that. The breakfast is very informal. If you feel like that was really good, you want to go back and get some more, feel free to just get up and meander back and get what you need. Come on back in. Helmut's going to keep talking, and it'll just be real informal like that, and come and go as you need to. The second thing I'm going to mention to you is the resource table, okay? And I'm going to mention this up top because I don't know what your schedule is and who's coming and who's going. So Helmut has worked really hard, and he and his wife, to bring a lot of very good resources. This is the one I'll feature at this time. It's a daily devotional written from a biblical worldview perspective. You got a Bible verse. You've got a scientific insight. So the science and Bible are actually friends. They're not opposed. And then you'll see some real life applications. I just turned to March 19th, today's date, and read it. And I thought, I'm going to get that book. And I'm not big on devotionals. So many devotionals are light and fluffy. This is not a light and fluffy devotional. Like, it's meaty. It'll take you spiritually deep. And so this is one of the great resources that are featured back on the table. All right. I'm going to pray for this group and turn things over to Helmut. Pray with me. Father, thank you so much for this day. And I love Biblical Worldview Weekends. I just so anticipate it. So I'm just preparing for just a feast today on your truth. Thank you for the food that's been provided. Thank you for the families that have chosen to come and be a part of our morning. This is such an exciting church. So many life change things going on in our hearts and lives. Worldview mega shifts taking place. Biblical worldview perspectives being implemented and prioritized and lived out, where we're challenging these whole old ways of looking at life. Thank you so much for the newness of your truth and your insight. Bless Helmut today and Thea as they're with us. May they be a family, a part of our extended family, and feel the hospitality of everybody here today. We ask all these things in your name. Amen. Would you give welcome to Helmut?
Thank you. You know, when it comes to singing, my favorite verse, of course, is "Make a joyful noise unto the Lord." My name is Helmut Welk. Helmut, in case you never heard of that, that's an old German name for old Germans, and I am one. I was born in Germany. That's how I got that name. But when I was 3 or 4 months old, my parents and I decided we want to see the world, and we moved to Chicago. So I grew up in the city of Chicago. I got all my schooling there. My mom says when I was young, I could speak only German because my parents were Germans, not military related, to the, you know, army forces. But now, so when I speak German now, and I do go to Germany twice a year to do talks like this, I speak German with a Chicago accent, so I hope that's okay with you. I became a Christian at the University of Illinois. I got a couple of engineering degrees just down the road in Champaign-Urbana. Went to work for a little company. I probably shouldn't mention the name, but you might have something to do with little green tractors and combines. But I worked for them for 38 years, and all along it became a hobby. Because even after I became a Christian, I always wondered about, what about carbon 14? What about the Lucy fossil? What about dinosaurs? Who wants to talk about dinosaurs today, this morning? Okay, we got a few. If we've got kids, let's say 12 and under, if I ask you some questions, we are going to do a dino quiz. If you speak it out, you can get a little dinosaur to take home. How about that? Are you excited about that? We got some kids here, there. We'll do that. So let's go ahead and get started. I recently had knee replacement surgery, so I'm going to not quite used to standing for a long time, so I'm going to relax here a little bit. But let's get started. Are we ready? You are ready? Okay. Okay, what animal group lived on Earth first, or has been on Earth the longest? We got birds, we got dinosaurs, and we got fish. Which group do you think has been on Earth the longest? Okay. Fish. Anybody else want to guess? Okay. You know, depending on your worldview, some people might say dinosaurs, right? Because they think, according to the evolutionary story, they were here first, especially before the birds. And all. But anyway, the Bible tells us that on day five, God created all the animals that live in the sea, fish, and air. So, here, you can get the first prize. Come on up. And on day six, all the land animals. So that would include Triceratops, T-Rex, giraffes, and every other land animal. That's what the Bible teaches. And based on the fossil record, I think that's very true. Can't get into that. But let's just keep going. Here's another that gives you the answer. There's actually two correct answers if you recognize that in the verse. A and C, birds and fish, animals of the air and of the sea. So let's do a dino quiz. What's the name of this creature? Let's have someone else try right there. Is that a T-Rex? You bet it is. Come on up. We're going to have to do this a little faster. How about a T-Rex? There you go. Here's another one. A little more harder, a little more difficult. Anybody want to guess at this one? Paraceropolis. It's an interesting one because it's got two chambers in the crest that's above his head. And some people think that gave it a certain ability, like a certain type of beetle. What do you call that? The backfire beetle that shoots had two chambers in its rear end. And when it's threatened, it shoots out those two chemicals at once. When they mix in the air behind it, it makes a little ignition. It actually flames. Little tiny thing, but if you had one of those beetles on your hand, they're alive today, and it did that, you would get a burn on your skin. So some people think this might have been the origin of fire-breathing dragons. Paraceropolis. How about this one? Anybody can identify that? Right there. Go ahead. Huh? Pterodactyl. Yeah, that's exactly right. Or pteranodon. They're very closely related. There are only minor differences. And then here's another one. What's this one? Anybody know? Good job. Let's get someone else a chance. Come on, guess. Go ahead. Huh? Say again? Leviathan. We're not sure what Leviathan is, but you're right. It's from the sea. How many of you caught the fact that it has flippers and probably did not walk on land very much? This one in particular is a plesiosaur. But come on up. Get a little prize here anyway. How about this one? This one should be easy. Even the adults can get this one. Who didn't answer yet? Back there. Exactly. You guys are good. Come on up. Triceratops. And then this one. Who wants to do this one? I just happen to have one right here. Right there. Stegosaurus. Come on up. There it is. Stegosaurus. Got all those spikes on its back. It looks kind of like this. But I'm going to give you one of these. How about a Spinosaurus? Now, this one's a little harder. I just showed you the answer. We find these by the millions in the same rock layers as dinosaur fossils. Does anybody know what that fossil is, that little spiral, young lady? Ammonite. Holy cow. I've never had a young lady catch that. Come on up. Very good. You guys know your dinosaurs. Yes, that is an ammonite. It lived in the sea. And these fossils are probably the most prolific that are found across the world. It lived in the sea, and yet it's buried with dinosaur bones. Is that a big clue? Maybe. Think about it. Ammonites. In fact, over 95% of all fossils that we find worldwide, are plants and animals that lived in the oceans. Even on Mount Everest in the Himalayas, we find fossils like these. Trilobites, more ammonites. They're all sea creatures. What are they doing up there? Another clue, right? 95. We got some plant fossils here, the living plant, actually, and then, of course, the fossil itself. A very good clue. So let me ask you a question. How do fossils form? You got some dinosaur fossils, another ammonite. Let me ask you a question. Let's think about this. If an animal dies in the forest, does it become a fossil today? Okay, good answer. He's really getting into the details. This kid studied. What's your name?
Noah.
Noah, of course. Noah, you helped me this morning. Yeah. You see, they don't become fossils. If a deer dies in the forest and nobody else, no humans are around, what happens to the carcass? Well, the first thing is most of the flesh gets eaten. The bones will degrade. And in probably the first foot of all our soils, there's all kinds of microbes and bacteria. And they attack and degrade the bones. And even maybe 18 months or so, even the antlers are gone. So when you think about all the animals that could have died in a forest, they don't get fossilized. They're not deep enough. Even if a fish dies in a lake, what happens? The body typically floats first, right? And then other fish come nibble on it until it's all gone. And then eventually what's left goes to the bottom. And even in the oceans and lakes and rivers, that first layers of mud is full of bacteria and other things that decompose it all and the bones are gone. Otherwise, you think about all the lakes around here, there'd be fossilized fish at the bottom of those lakes by the hundreds of thousands, if not more. But they don't form fossils. What does it take to form a fossil? Only when the body or the plant is buried quickly and deeply. It must be deep in the dirt or mud to protect it from decay. And it has to be deep. So kids especially, say this. How do fossils form? Buried quickly and deeply. Say that. Quickly and deeply. Quickly and deeply. Then it can sit there and become fossilized, and it doesn't take millions of years. Here's a quick example. How many have seen a little fish floating in a lake, river, or an edge of a continent in the ocean? Something happened, a big earthquake, fountains of the deep perhaps breaking up, and then there's mudslides underwater. When a tsunami goes across the sea, underneath there is all kinds of turbulence stirring up the material, and if it's really big, it comes along and the poor little fishy gets inundated, and if it's low enough, it gets completely buried. Buried alive. In fact, on the mountaintops, Himalayas, we found clams that are closed. That means they're alive. When a clam dies, the muscle that holds the shells together relaxes, it's opened, and it falls and gets decayed. But we have fossilized clams that are completely shut. They were buried alive quickly and what? Deeply, quickly, and deeply. Only way to get a fossil. And where do you think most of those might have happened? What would have happened catastrophically? Well, here's another good example. Look, can you see the big fish? And sticking out of his mouth is the tail of a smaller fish. This poor guy didn't even have time to finish lunch and got quickly and deeply buried. That's what it takes. And it was instantaneous, heavy burial. Here's another one. Here we got a fish. You can see the long snout, kind of a long body. And it must have been near the surface at the beginning of the flood. And some of these other flying creatures were flying low, avoiding volcanic ash, who knows what else. And he was flying over the water. And this fish saw it and jumped out of the water, caught it in its mouth, went back into the water, and before he could finish it, they both got deeply and quickly buried. That's how you get fossils like this. And there's so many other examples from around the world. So let me ask you a question. Were dinosaurs on Noah's Ark? What do you think? You know, there's a lot of people, you're kind of a little skeptical about that, especially if you have an ark shaped like that. And they would say, ha ha, no way. But really, think about it. First of all, it might be hard if we think about the ark and we don't really understand it. But according to the Bible, that thing was huge. Three levels, big levels. Anybody been to the Ark Encounter up near Cincinnati? Oh, yeah, so you guys are experts. That thing was very big. Cool. So another clue is, how big were dinosaurs? Some of them were gigantic, right? Big, really big. But when a dinosaur comes out of the egg, how big was it? Yeah. Noah's could give this presentation next week. And a few others of you, I'm sure. Right, the biggest dinosaur egg we've ever found is about the size of an American football. So how big was a T-Rex when it came out of the egg? Or a big Stegosaurus? You could hold it in your hand. Maybe the size of a chicken, an average chicken. So if those were the baby dinos, how big would a teenage dinosaur be? A teenage T-Rex, maybe only the size of a horse or an average elephant today. See, they had to live a long time under those conditions in the pre-flood world to get as big as they got. They did get big, but what was the job of the animals and the people on Noah's Ark? After the flood, they were to reproduce and multiply. So I'm sorry, Grandma and Grandpa would not have been on the Ark. The big dinosaurs didn't make it. The teenage ones, the smaller ones, they could easily get onto the ark. And, of course, the ark didn't look like that bathtub ark. It had the capacity of at least 522 railroad cars. It was big. And so the dinosaurs and all the animals on it would have been smaller. The ark looked like an ocean-going barge. In fact, oceanic engineers have looked at the dimensions given in the Bible, and they are perfect for an ocean-going barge. Very stable. Didn't need a motor because it wasn't going anywhere. It just had to float a long time, for about a year, in rough seas. And it could do it. The perfect dimensions. So were dinosaurs on Noah's Ark? Yeah. The teenage ones. Yes. Smaller and younger ones. So here we got a pair of elephants going that God brought to Noah. A pair of brontosaurus. Teenagers. So that in a year they could get off the ark and replenish. And they lived after the flood. There's a lot of dino legends. I don't have time to get into it. But we have pictures of what looks like brontosaurus or apatosaurus type dinosaurs. T-Rexes in western China that Marco Polo described. All around the world, we have what used to be called, if they didn't have the word for dinosaur, which wasn't invented until 1841, what would people have called them? Dragons. Large beasts. Certainly. Now, so does that mean dinos and humans coexisted? Did they live at the same time? Now, there are some evolutionists who get very angry at a cartoon called The Flintstones. Anybody ever see that? I liked it as a kid, and I think it's still popular among some kids. But they show Dino, a pet dinosaur, living with Fred and Wilma, and then Pebbles comes along. Dinos and humans, now some of the most ardent, you know, not all of them, but some very ardent evolutionists, they get angry at this. Because you cannot teach children that dinos and humans coexisted, and they might get the wrong idea from this cartoon. Whew. But did they coexist? What's the evidence? Well, I can't go into all of it, but we've got a lot of evidence, especially in the last 20, 25 years. God has given us amazing scientific evidence. But it is a big issue. This is why they get angry if you think dinosaurs and people coexisted. This is Dr. Louis Jacobs from Southern Methodist University. He's an expert on vertebrate paleontology, the study of animal fossils. He said, the co-occurrence of men and dinosaurs? Such an occurrence would dispel an earth with vast antiquity. The entire history of creation, including the days of rest, could be accommodated in the seven biblical days of the Genesis myth. That's what he calls it. But then he says evolution would be vanquished. Do you see how high the stakes are for an evolutionist? If they suddenly decide and it's determined that humans and dinosaurs coexisted, the 65 million years collapses. And according to Dr. Jacobs, so does the whole story of evolution, because there's not enough deep time for that story to even be semi-plausible. We'll talk more in church about why it's even less plausible in science today, the science of genetics. So what does modern science say? What are some of these discoveries? Is the 65 million years real? Well, here's some evidence. How many of you heard of soft biological tissue in dinosaur bones? About half the room. This is very real. This was discovered by a secular paleontologist. She calls herself a Christian, but believes deeply in deep time, millions of years. But they found this and looked under these the bone marrow under the microscope, and it looked like blood cells and vessels. And in the years since Dr. Schweitzer's first discovery of soft biological tissue, we've been finding them in dinosaur bones from around the world. Other scientists originally said, no, this can't be. No, it's got to be contamination. Nothing biological can last 65 million years. Well, at least that's what we knew at that time. Now they try to say it is. But one of the people who really was adamant saying that this cannot be, that, you know, we've got a mistake or a contamination, is Dr. Jeffrey Botta. He understands this material. He said, bones absorb uranium like crazy. You've got an internal dose that will wipe out biomolecules. If a bone, anything, is in the ground, there's little low levels of radiation in the ground. That's why you test your basements for radon. You know, maybe if you lived in your basement 5-10 years, it's not a big deal for most people. But if a bone or biological tissue of any kind, even if it's dead, but it's still got the biological tissue, after just 1 million years, it'd be gone. And as I said, though, we're finding this all over the world. Other scientists, a few years after Dr. Schweitzer announced her discovery, and took her several years just to get it published because nobody would believe it, like Dr. Botta, other scientists looked at it in Holland at an 80-million-year-old hadrosaur bones, and they did all the tests, just like she did, and they did even more. And they said, we've got soft dinosaur tissue. And then more recently, this is a Triceratops brow horn, one of the big horns on a Triceratops. It was buried only about 3 feet in the ground in Montana. You can see the full-size thing, but like most fossils, they're already broken up. There's earth movement. There's earth freezing and thawing over the years. And, of course, it was broken up. And so they looked at it, and they had some pieces that they could look under the microscope. And I don't have the video clip of this one, but it's soft. The bone marrow is still biological material, and it's not contamination. It's been tested. I think here's the video. See if we can do this one, of where you could grab hold of it, just like Mary Schweitzer did, of a blood vessel, and pull it with a little pair of tweezers. Do we have this video? Go ahead. And pull on it. It snaps back. So kids, these things are 65 million years old, they tell us, that have turned to stone. A fossil is like hard as stone. Does stone look like this? Will it stretch and pull back like a little rubber band? We've got hard scientific proof that these dinosaur bones cannot be 65 million years old. And I've got a whole talk that goes into this in more detail, as well as other evidences. So, let's go back to where we were. Can you do that, or do I need to flip? There we go. Here's another one. A friend of mine out in California is an expert on taking photographs through an electron microscope. And if you look carefully, you can see blood vessels from the Cretaceous period dinosaur, about 60 to 100 million years old. And yet, it looks like if you would look like a relatively modern dead animal blood vessel, it looks like that. And then you get one from the Permian period, 200 million years old. You can still see, make out the blood vessel. Or even one from the Devonian, the early stages of the supposed evolution of life, up to 400 million years old. You can also see even more clearly a blood vessel that cannot be there if they're really that old. It can't. I'm sorry. Maybe you never heard this, and this kind of blows you away, but there's no chance that dinosaurs went extinct 6,500 million, 400 million years ago. It's not possible. So, do we have time, a little time yet? Are dinosaurs in the Bible? What do you think? Yeah, we got some smart kids here. You know where they are? Where's one of the verses? There's actually several, half a dozen. We're just going to cover one here real quick. This is from Job 40. And if you've read the book of Job, you know you've got Job and his friends complaining about, you know, all their difficulties, suffering, sin in the world. And they get to Job 38, and God speaks and says, well, where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? And then the rest of the book is just beautiful descriptions of nature. Go out and do a little Bible reading with your family out in the woods on a hilltop. And it's just fun to read that about the wonderful creations of God. But we get to verse 40, chapter 40, verse 15. And God says, "Now, behemoth, which I made with thee, he eats grass like an ox. But lo, his strength is in his belly and his loins, and he's big, giant belly. And he moves his tail like a cedar tree." Now, the cedar trees of Lebanon, which are now gone, but Solomon used the timbers to make the rafters in the temple that he built. So these are gigantic trees, the cedars trees. What animal has a tail like a cedar tree? What do you think? A brachiosaurus. But you know, most of our Bibles, if you look in the footnotes, in the last, only probably the last 100 years, they will say things, well, behemoth. What is it? Oh, it must be a big land animal like an elephant. Does that look like the tail that looks like a cedar tree? No, it looks more like a broomstick. How about this? And others will say, oh, it must be a hippopotamus, a big land creature. Does that move its tail like a cedar tree? That's hardly a tail at all. Maybe thousands of years ago, elephants and hippopotamuses looked like this. And they've lost that tail that looks like a cedar tree. No, I don't think so either. This looks like an animal with a tail like a cedar tree, a big land animal. It's big. And I think that's what Job's describing. There's other verses. Sometimes they're called the beasts or the dragons of the air. The word dragon actually appears in the Bible. But some of our commentators today have tried to clean up that Hebrew language and feel ashamed to use the word dragon, even though every culture has pictures of dragons and stories and sculptures. But it's in there. In fact, Martin Luther, when he first translated the Bible into German, used the German word for dragon, Drachen, including describing what sounds like a snake or dragon of the air in Isaiah. It looks and sounds like a pteranodon or pterodactyl. They're in the Bible. You can look them all up. You see, Noah's flood was global, was real, and that accounts for the mass extinction of most dinosaurs, especially the big ones, and other animals, like here in this example, the whole school of fish, very quickly and what? Quickly and deeply buried. Buried alive, in this case, under lots of volcanic ash and mud. So, key points, 95% of all fossils are animals and plants that lived in the oceans. Fossils, to become a fossil, has to be quick and deeply buried, and we still have dinosaur soft tissue and cells, the blood vessels, even what looks like a blood corpuscle, that cannot be there if it's a million years old. We also have found carbon-14, which is only good to 80,000 years, so that's another indicator. Great stuff. You see, dinosaurs were on Noah's Ark, the young ones. They didn't have to be the big ones. Dinosaurs and people did live at the same time, before and after the flood. I think after the flood, the dinosaurs never got as big. Their food supply, the atmosphere was not the same, so they never got as big. And never got as big in numbers. What happened to them that we don't have them today? And I think they're gone. But probably within the last 100 years or 200 years, the last ones were killed and we hunted them to extinction. And that happens a lot. I don't think they're around. There's some people still looking for them in Congo, but I'm doubtful. But there's no doubt that they lived at the same time. We've got images of them all over the world. The ancient, not so ancient, 900 years ago, the Anasazi Indians in the American Southwest drew pictures of creatures. And they're identifiable. A park ranger could say, in this cave, we got some petroglyphs. Look, here's people hunting. These might be wolves or coyotes. And this might be donkeys or something related. And these are goats. oh, this one? We don't know what that is. But even secularists have said it looks like an apatosaurus. It looks like, how would they have known to draw that? So what are you going to trust? God's word, which changeth not, or man's word, which is changing all the time? Of course, God's word, you can trust it, believe it, and study it. See, the Bible has stood the test of time and science, It really has. And we don't have to change it. We don't have to misinterpret what a behemoth is. We just go with it. And you know what? God shows us the answers and shows us his word is true. That's what you should do. So study it. Let me do a quick commercial. I've got a DVD. I made a lot of DVDs, about 7 of my talks, but I don't order them anymore. Most people don't even have a DVD player anymore, especially the younger folks. But I do have thumb drives with 7 of my talks, including the full one on dinosaurs, people in the Bible, Atheism and the Origin of Life. Watch that video and you'll know scientifically atheism is not possible. Or it's a religious point of view. They don't like that word, but it's true. Science makes atheism really impossible, and you'll learn all about that in those. And then we also talk about chimps and humans, chimp and human DNA, how similar it is, talk on fossils, and then human genetics, which we'll do a short version of that in just about half an hour. Okay. God bless you. We've got various resources out there. The Science and the Bible by Ken Ham is a great one for teenagers. And if you want to really dig deep into it, the Evolution's Achilles Heels, I have the book and DVD. It features scientists, PhD scientists, who explain from their field of science why they don't believe in evolution, but they believe the Bible. Great resources. The Answers books. Going to the Grand Canyon, you may have heard about that. I can tell you more about it. Do we have time for take a question?
Yes.
Okay. Let's take a question.
By the way, let's just give him a hand. What an incredible job.
Oh, wow.
We loved it.
Thank you.
You're doing great.
God is great.
Yes, he is. Anybody with a question?
Anything?
Okay.
I'll come to you. Or fossils? I think we got just a little bit of time.
You mentioned dinosaurs within the last 100 to 200 years.
I think they've gone extinct. We hunted them to extinction. They did exist with people after the flood, probably for 1,500 years or more. We have the legends, the stories. Every culture on Earth has stories of what they call dragons. But when you look at their pictures, the sculptures they put from Babylon to Egypt to the American Southwest, Anasazi Indians, all those images look like, whoa, that looks like an apatosaurus. That looks like a stegosaurus out in Thailand or Cambodia. There's a temple there with beautiful sculptures, reliefs, and of animals, mountain goats, monkeys. And then suddenly in the middle of it, there's something that looks like it's got a long tail. It's got these plates on its back and a small head. If you looked at it, you'd call it a stegosaurus, right? How did they know what it looked like? There's just too many details that these people, hundreds and hundreds of years ago, that they drew. How could they have known it? Maybe they had a coloring book of dinosaurs from today. They got the early edition. No, they saw them. Not as big, not as plentiful, but they were there. And, you know, if an animal is a pest, if every night there's some critter out there and it's eating your sheep and your goats, and you need them for your village to survive, your children, what are the men of the village going to do? They're going to go on a hunt. People are smart. They figure it out. They say, okay, you guys go over there and distract this beast, and we'll come from the side and stab it with our spears. And they know it's dangerous. But people have been hunting dangerous animals till the present day without guns because they needed to. They couldn't afford to keep losing sheep and goats every night. And I think we just hunted them to extinction eventually. Thanks.
Question. Yes, great question. So anyone else? We have time just for maybe one or two more. Yes.
I come from California, and one of the big things that we learned about when I was a kid was the La Brea tar pits. And I don't see a lot of resources that talk about the animals that were found there, but they're not fossilized, of course, because they were buried and stuck in the tar, but they do find a lot of ancient creatures there. So I just wondered if you had any resources or information about that.
So to make tar, you need a lot of organic material. I think the tar pits and some of the other buried animals in North America and even in Siberia, I think that's all post-flood. So these animals, saber-toothed tigers, woolly mammoths, mastodons, they got caught up in this sticky stuff, and some of it was so deep that they sank into the bottom. And because they're quickly and deeply buried, they also got fossilized. The mammoth especially is interesting because we find them going all across North Siberia, islands in the Arctic Sea north of Siberia. And remember, after the flood, we have the perfect conditions for an ice age. And during the ice age, we know the ocean levels were hundreds of feet lower. There was land bridges. You've all heard of the land bridge between Siberia and Alaska. You could walk from mainland Europe to England and Ireland. There was so much water tied up in the ice. That's how the animals spread around. You could even go most of the way all the way to Australia. Certain animals went in that direction. A few people followed them. And the Americans came across the land bridge, and they then, as the waters went back up and the ice melted, the ice age came to an end fairly quickly, like over a few hundred years. Then you can have these oceans come high, and then you have local areas where these animals came from the Middle East, and then later versions, the mammoths and so on, would have got buried in Siberia because the oceans were no longer warm enough. What does it take to make an ice age? Ice and rain and snow, so much. The only way to get so much to make an ice age and make the giant glaciers, and even probably in this area we've probably had hundreds of feet of snow, is if you have a lot of warm water. You need warm water for it to evaporate, go up, come over the land, and then get dumped on all winter long. And then some of these animals that did come here eventually fell into little areas where they would have been fossilized. Does that help? I haven't heard soft tissue. She asked if there was soft tissue in those animals as well. There probably is, but I haven't heard of anybody looking for it. It gets even more interesting because everybody agrees those are probably thousands, hundreds of thousands of years old by secular. It's much more exciting to find soft tissue in something that's supposed to be 80 million years old.
All right. So we have time for one more.
I think Noah has a burning
question. Yes, Noah.
I've heard that mammoths existed when the pyramids of Giza were being built. Is this true?
Say that again.
I've heard that mammoths were alive when the pyramids were being built. Is this true?
Yeah, but the woolly ones were probably not in Egypt. But that's the right time period. Probably. Yeah, all these animals of various... Remember, the mammoth is just a variation of the elephant. And if you were traveling across Siberia, a lot of hair or fur would be very helpful. And, you know, you think about it, that's how the animals migrated. The ones that had long hair went north and survived. The ones with short hair that went north didn't survive. And so they couldn't reproduce very well. But good example is dog. Long-haired dogs, like a husky, some others you might think of, they could have gone north and done well. If those same animals went south into Africa, the heat exhaustion would have wiped them out. But ones with shorter hair, like the hyenas and dingoes, they could survive and thrive. And so they reproduced. And so they just reproduced according to the main traits that they had, and that's how we get the variation. But we know that all dogs are that one single dog kind, a created original dog kind, for example. And from that we get our huskies, house dogs, but also foxes, dingoes, and wolves, and coyotes. They're all related to a dog kind. So the number of animals on Noah's Ark would have been much lower. Some people, you know, mock the idea that every species on that we've identified on Earth had to be on the Ark. No, not at all. Not at all. They didn't have to have a German Shepherd and a fox and a wolf and a coyote. No, they only needed closer to the original dog kind. And there are scientists researching what are the kinds from Genesis. A lot fewer than what we have today. And because natural selection to a certain degree is real. There is variation, but it's got strict limits.
All right. Once again, give him Hellman a hand. Yeah. Incredible job. Incredible job. And so what we're trying to do is clear the clutter, the ideological clutter from your mind so that you can get to the feet of Jesus faster. You're going to face some of these issues in the world. You'll face them at different stages of life. And I want to tell you this morning, I am super encouraged. We've got a bunch of just little mini creationists running around this church. And that's because of you, the parents, and AIG teachers, and people like Helmut coming in. God is so good. The future is looking brighter because of you and your kids. Praise God. And good job, kids. I'm so proud of you. In fact, on the count of three, I want us all to say together, yabba dabba do. All right? One, two, three.
Yabba dabba
do. Let's do it again. A little louder this time. Ready? One, two, three.
Yabba dabba
do. Yes. That's the new amen for today only. Yes.
Hey, if anybody 12 and under did not get a dinosaur during the talk, come on up and get one. I got a whole bunch more. So if you'd like to have a little dinosaur as a souvenir of today's session, please come and get it.
While they're coming up, we're going to dismiss in just a few moments, and you'll have some time to go check out the resource table. And then also know that if you can trust the Bible in Genesis, you can trust the Bible in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. If you need Jesus today, open your life up. Let him come in. Clear the clutter. Get to the feet of Jesus faster. That's what this is about. So you can walk with him, okay? All right. Get your dinosaurs. Good job. Good job. Yabba dabba doo. Here we go.